Picture this: Columbia University, New York, 1901. Alfred Kroeber received the first PhD in anthropology ever granted by Columbia. He founded the anthropology department at UC Berkeley and set out on a quest to study people. Human culture is more than atoms, more than molecules, more than natural laws, more than life. In an article still famous after almost 100 years, Kroeber described culture as super organic. You're listening to The Super O Show with Professors Mark Joshua Gordon and Alexis Altunian, where we find culture everywhere and in everything. So stay tuned right here on the Lancer Radio Network, Pasadena Campus Sounds at www.lancerradio.org.
Nom 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 Neanderthals. Hi anthropologists, we're here today on the Super O Show. Everyone in the room is laughing and smiling, so we're about to have an amazing episode. They liked my opener, I think. We are going to be talking today about, among other things, the paleo diet, and also all things related to the anthropology of food, and health food in particular. And we have two guests with us today on the Super O Show. The first is documentary producer, TV radio faculty member, and paleo diet practitioner, Sarah Barker. Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
And who else do we have with us, Alexis?
So we also have environmental scientist, entrepreneur, and owner of the most incredible and delicious grassroots natural market and kitchen, a family-owned and operated business in South Pasadena, Noah Pooney.
Hey, how you doing?
Good to have you, Noah.
Thank you very much.
I wanted to start by asking Alexis what she knows about the anthropology of food.
So the anthropology of food, Professor Gordon, Mark, has a huge history, and I think it's one of the classes both of us enjoyed the most in undergrad, but the discipline has a history and storied past, and I'd kind of like to take it back there since we tend to bring the historical to contemporary. So there was a scholar, Lewis Henry Morgan, who in 1877 wrote about food and subsistence from a cross-cultural perspective. His book, Ancient Society, or the Researches into the Lines of Human Progress from Savagery through Barbarism to Civilization, such an abstract and intense title, suggested that cultures evolved as foragers. They progressed into horticulturalists, pastoralists, and from pastoralism, they took on agriculture, small-scale subsistence, and then moved into industrial agriculture or large-scale agriculture. So anthropologists have always been fascinated about food. How can we talk about what it is to be human without mentioning subsistence? And I should point out, subsistence is more than just food. It's about life and living and enjoying that life that we have the ability to lead. And so the anthropologists have tons to say about food, ethnographies galore, food blogs, you name it. And today I think our guests are really going to help shed some light into one avenue, one aspect of food and food culture.
One of the things that I think is interesting about this topic, specifically I'm referring to the paleo diet, is that we as anthropologists talk about all things paleo all of the time. And this is something that is recently, maybe not even so recently, it's been around for a while now. You can tell us how long, in your opinion, paleo has been a thing. It's becoming more and more trendy. I don't know if that's the right word. Popular is probably a better word.
An emergent subculture becoming a mainstream culture.
Absolutely. And I don't think a lot of people really understand what it is or how it relates to anthropology. So I wanted to start by asking Sarah what the paleo diet or the paleo lifestyle actually is. It's related to anthropology in a way. It's becoming more and more popular. I don't think a lot of people, even if they've heard of it, really understand it, though.
Sure. Well, you know, it's funny. I think that there are a lot of definitions for paleo. I think oftentimes it depends on who you're talking to. But I think someone who is living a paleo lifestyle and really doing it 100%. You know, they'll use these percentages when I visit paleo blogs. You know, I'm 80%, I'm 80-20, you know. If you're 100%, then you are eating a completely grain-free, legume-free, dairy-free, sugar-free diet. Sugars would come from fruit sources or honey. Your fruit and vegetables are organic. You're looking at grass-fed meat that has not been shot up with hormones. So everything is very, very much in its natural state. You should be able to pronounce all of the ingredients on a food label. And I think depending on who you talk to, it moves beyond food. You know, you start getting into spending time outside 30 minutes a day so that you have direct vitamin D exposure. There's a lot of science to support this notion that, you know, taking vitamin D supplements really isn't giving you what you need, that you actually need to have exposure to the sun for a minimum of 30 minutes a day. I'm a barefoot runner or close to barefoot, so I wear those crazy Vibram shoes, and when I can, I run completely barefoot. So there's it's about food, but it's also kind of becoming more than about food, you know, kind of getting back to how we used to live, you know, thousands and thousands of years ago when things were a lot simpler.
I don't want to go off on too much of a tangent, but my ADD is speaking to me. And as far as those shoes are concerned, I never figured those out. Do you like those? Because they freak me out. It's like each toe is in a little toe pocket.
Oh,
man. Is that the type of shoe you're talking about?
Well, this might have to be a different show, but I hated them initially. It was hell. I actually had to wrap my toes in Band-Aids because my toes would bleed.
Sounds like foot binding.
Yeah, well, it kind of was like that for a while. But here's the deal. I've been running for 25 years, and I had developed a serious injury. And I was in physical therapy for it, and I had read all this stuff about Vibram shoes, and I started wearing them. And I was able to run again after thinking I'd never be able to run again. My knee problems were gone. The problems that I was developing in my hip as it relates to my knee injury was gone. So I've been running marathons in them now for about as long as they've been around, so about 5 or 6 years. And now I don't like wearing anything else hardly, so they're great.
You've adapted to this new technology, and really, as anthropologists, that's what we love exploring, humans adapting to something new, finding a niche, exploring that. And you also mentioned that it's become a lifestyle, and that's exactly what subsistence is. And a big part of my lifestyle is going to work every day. I wish I ran like Sarah, marathons, very impressive. I've only done a mini triathlon, and I don't think that counts. But one of the places
it counts.
Well, one of the places I go to is phenomenal for feeding me, because part of my lifestyle is working 24/7 grading papers for you students out there. And it's a labor that I love. And so I often go to Grassroots, and I know this is going to connect to what Sarah said about maintaining a healthy lifestyle. And it's not just about food. So Noah, tell us what Grassroots is really. I know I teased it a little bit. It's very unique. Tell us why.
Sure. So Grassroots has been around this year, going on 46 years. We've been in the same location 36 years this year, and my family has had the pleasure of owning it for the last 29 years. So we're a family-run operation. We're very tight, and we really care about our customers and what goes in their bodies.
Well, I have to add, their staff and Noah's family are incredible people. The interaction with them, for me, feels like a community, which is what anthropologists also study when it comes to food. It's not just about what you eat and the nutrition. It's that cultural communitas, that camaraderie. And I definitely feel that, honestly, truly, when I'm there. You guys do carry paleo foods. So tell us about what makes it unique in terms of what you guys sell, what the amazing things that you offer.
Sure. So, you know, basically, we don't put anything on the shelf that we wouldn't eat ourselves. And we do a really, really good job trying to bring in things that are, you know, very healthy and locally sourced and are environmentally, economically, and socially sustainable. So that takes up a lot of time, but it's definitely worth it because we see it. You know, our customers are healthier, they're happier, they enjoy our product offerings. And we're also really good if people want us to bring stuff in that we don't have on the shelves currently. And, you know, going back to paleo, we have a lot of very cool paleo stuff, really cool products. I brought some stuff in today that we were able to try, so that was really nice.
Yeah, Mark didn't save me any.
I'm
waiting for a piece of that.
It's right outside. It's ready for you.
That's because we're on radio.
I was going to mention that you brought that stuff in, and actually it surprisingly was delicious. It's more nuts than I've eaten in, I don't know, my whole life all at once, but it was very delicious. I think that's how those things are made, right?
Yeah.
They use nuts as a substitute for other things that you probably shouldn't be eating.
Yeah. Paleo products are very interesting. They're very minimalistic. You know, the ingredients are usually like 3-4 things. You can pronounce all the names, and they're very easy to make on your own too if you want to deconstruct them and, you know, do it in your house, maybe save some money. But, you know, the whole paleo approach is very holistic with a primal flair. And I think it's really interesting. It's really gained a lot of traction over the past year or two. And I think it's here to stay.
Sure. Sarah and I were actually talking earlier about how you can pronounce all of the names of stuff. We were reading the ingredients list. And that's pretty unique for food, especially packaged food these days. So I was impressed by that. And I have a question for Sarah real quick. And that is, we were discussing this too, paleo vegan. What is that? Do either of you know anything about paleo vegan? Because we knew someone, I'm not going to say who it was, but Professor Altoony and I both know this girl who claimed to be doing a paleo vegan lifestyle, and I didn't know those things were possible in one kind of
or
diet.
Compatible.
Well,
or
they're
compatible.
Not really compatible. I mean, I guess the only similarities that they really have is that they're both a completely raw kind of, not raw, because paleo is certainly not raw, but I mean, they're a very natural, you know, organic way of eating. But paleo is very, very flesh-heavy diet. I mean, I would say that most of your calories are coming from animal fat calories or good fat calories like olive oil, coconut oil, nuts. But it's a huge, huge meat-eating diet. So to me, it's a little bit of an oxymoron. I would love to find out more about that because that's a little bit of a curiosity to me. But yeah.
Have you heard of it?
Yeah. You know, I hear of a lot of very interesting diets and fads. And I think, they do contradict each other a lot, but I think they also have a lot of similarities. So, yeah, obviously, you know, somebody who's vegan isn't going to consume meat or animal products. But I think aside from the meat, it makes sense. You know, they don't eat a lot of processed foods, no grains, no sugar. And it just depends, you know, and all these diets are open to interpretation anyway. It's what works for you, you know. So I feel like I have a lot of customers who they say they're vegan, but, you know, maybe they'll still buy like animal products, you know. So just differing degrees and how strict you want to be.
And I like that it is open for interpretation. And speaking of interpretation, as an anthropologist, we need to build a lexicon to really understand something. So perhaps what we should do...
Sorry, inside joke. That's Alexis's new name.
Let's put it on the outside. Yeah. So Alexis's new handle.
They had to make me laugh. I was really good with making that transition, you guys. So I want to know what this lexicon means. You guys both use the word vegan. I know how to use it, but maybe our listeners and maybe we could shed some light on what it is to be vegan. I also heard the word raw in there. So let's get a roadmap for these terms. What do these mean to you? We could also talk about organic. Let's throw that out there.
So I think all of these terms are very arbitrary in a sense and very they have a lot of gray area associated with them. You know, vegetarian, for instance, there's so many degrees of being a vegetarian. You know, some eat eggs, some don't eat eggs, some consume dairy products, some don't. Some won't even touch like an animal byproduct, you know, and then you have veganism, which is anti all animal products and byproducts. And even within veganism, you know, there's differing degrees. Vegans will wear a leather coat and some wouldn't. So it really depends, you know, and organic and all these new terms that are coming out these days. Same thing. I mean, the USDA has different certification requirements for their organic label. Another company that does organic certification might have a completely different set of requirements. It just depends on the source. It depends on who's funding it, and it depends on where the money's coming from. Because, you know, organic means one thing to me and something to everybody else. So I think the paper trail is the most important thing when it comes to these diets and terms.
I do want to say, though, that I have to just disagree a little bit because I think with paleo, it's really not open for interpretation. I think anytime you're bringing in dairy or grain into a diet, you are eating inflaming foods. And, you know, I think that, you know, and there's a lot of science to support this, that the goal is to get away from an inflaming diet, anything that's inflames you internally.
And that sounds really dangerous. I don't think I want to have internal flaming. Do you guys?
It doesn't sound good.
No.
So I want to talk more about what inflammation is. Does anyone have a brief definition, like a 10-second definition of what inflammation is?
Yeah, well, it's anything that you're eating that actually makes your muscles or any kind of your interior inflamed, which can be a problem for arthritis and multiple sclerosis and a lot of joint issues and a lot of other issues like that.
I gotcha. So that's something that you don't want.
That's right.
We're going to talk more about all of this great stuff having to do with food when we come back. www.lancerradio.org, super organic.
A mixtape isn't just a bunch of songs brought together by accident. A mixtape is a statement with its own story. Join host Gabriel Perez for The Mixtape as he invites musicians from PCC to share their stories through a mix of their carefully selected songs. explore and learn to appreciate new music as we break the barriers of genre and listen to their story. The Mixtape on Lancer Radio, sharing music with a personal touch, Fridays at 6 p.m. on LancerRadio.org.
PCC offers a free shuttle service for students who wish to travel between the main campus, the Allen Avenue Gold Line Station, and the Community Education Center. The shuttle service operates Monday through Thursday, 6:30 a.m. to 10:45 p.m., and Friday, 6:30 a.m. to 5:45 p.m., with departures every 15 to 30 minutes from each location. For more information, call 626-585-7223.
Hello, anthropologists. We're back on the Super O Show. Pasadena Campus Sounds, Lancer Radio Network, www.lancerradio.org. And we are talking with Noah Pooney and Sarah Barker about paleo, vegan, and non-vegan diets that Neanderthals used to eat and all sorts of good stuff. Alexis, you wanted to talk about the word paleo.
Yes, you've now brought up Neanderthal twice, and who knows if our listeners have even taken physical anthropology. You know, Noah actually took my magic witchcraft religion class. He's not only a family friend, but a former student. So
my favorite class, by the way.
Oh, no. Thank you. You made it fun. This was years ago. Then he transferred to UC Berkeley.
You're making a lexicon blush.
Okay. As long as she doesn't lose any words from her lexicon, we'll be okay, you know?
You guys are too much. So one word that I do want to share with our listeners, because that's me, word girl, paleo. We keep using it in reference to the diet, but I think we need the anthropological / archaeological context. So paleo is the Greek word for ancient. In the cultural and archaeological area where we excavate and work with remains of, you know, Neanderthal or Heidelbergensis, or even modern human, we divide this period of time into the lower and upper Paleolithic. And I think we really should stress that that's where this paleo diet came from, that word choice. So the lower Paleolithic is like literally 2.5 million years to 200,000 years ago. There's no quiz on this, by the way, listeners, don't worry. But the upper Paleolithic is 40,000 years to 10,000 years ago. This is precisely the time where species like Neanderthal were finding the end of the line as a species, breeding with modern humans, as we now know from Max Planck Institute in Leipzig, Germany. And we're there. We're humans.
If you think that's the best evidence of who Neanderthal was with respect to modern humans. But that's a totally separate show.
It is a totally separate show. But let's suffice it to say that they were both alive during this period, the Upper Paleolithic. And archaeologists have this amazing job, and paleoanthropologists have this amazing job of going back through remains, hominid or hominin remains, and figuring out what they ate and what was available at that time. And I'm fascinated by the fact that we can try to recreate a paleo diet in a contemporary society where our main form in the West of subsistence is not subsistence agriculture, but industrial agriculture. So let's talk about some of those foods again, the foods that have potential to inflame, maybe the foods that our early ancestors and modern humans stayed away from, and what we can now enjoy today that we think were enjoyed by those earlier individuals.
I'm quite sure that most of those foods that Neanderthal ate and that, as you put it, modern humans try and stay away from are all my favorite foods. So I
think they had Twinkies back in the Paleolithic era.
What are you saying, Noah? I thought we were homeboys. I wanted to ask both of you, but especially Sarah, because she is such a, as she puts it, a hardcore practitioner, a semi-hardcore practitioner of the paleo diet. Is there any downside to it? And I want to kind of attach that question to what Alexis was talking about. You know, what foods did we not eat? What foods should we eat? And if we know the answer to this, how did this relate to what early man used to do?
Sure. So, well, I guess in terms of the foods that we, you know, quote unquote, shouldn't eat, you know, the whole idea here is that the theory goes, epipaleo scientists who are studying the paleo diet and, you know, why it would be useful today, you know, 1 in 3 adults in America are obese. And the science suggests that it's you know, directly related to our eating foods that raise cortisol levels, stress levels in the body, in inflammatory foods. So you stay away from things that basically we haven't evolved to be able to metabolize well. Dairy being probably the number one thing, really very inflammatory food. That's why they recommend that people with severe arthritis stay away from dairy because it's very inflaming. What was your other question?
That was a compound question. There was like six questions.
I know, but which question was
I'm
that
sorry.
For?
If we were in court, I'd be objected to.
Okay, I object, Mark.
Thank you. One of the questions kind of attached to that is, so we know what we shouldn't eat because that's what you just talked about. Is there a downside to this diet? If you follow this plan and don't eat the things that you're not supposed to eat and maybe focus on the things that we should, is there anything that could go wrong, let's say?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, I honestly feel that the downside is that it's difficult. You know, I mean, we are surrounded by processed food. Anytime you just walk into a grocery store, basically, you know, what people who eat paleo would say is walk into the store and just work the circumference of the store. And anything that are in the aisles in the middle of the store, you should never be visiting those aisles. But that's 90% of the market. You know, we're surrounded by fast food restaurants. We are working too many hours. We're very, very stressed out. We're not getting enough sleep. So eating this way takes a lot of planning. You know, every Sunday I cook all day long. I cook all kinds of meat, all kinds of vegetables. I freeze it. I bring my food to work with me every day when I go out to eat. I have to be very mindful about the menu. And when I go to parties, people ask me all kinds of lame questions about why I eat the way I do. I used to believe that I would feel deprived, but I've become a much better cook since I've been on a paleo diet. And Mark and I were talking about this earlier. I mean, I'm making a beautiful pumpkin chocolate tart for Thanksgiving that's paleo. So you can still have these things. It's just that you're looking to more natural, organic sources for your sugar, honey, fruit juice. You can still use flour. You're just using things like tapioca flour, coconut flour. I cook a lot with hazelnut flour and almond flour. So, I mean, you can still have pizza. You can still have, you know, I have pancakes after my run. I had these wonderful pear pancakes Saturday after my long run. So, you know, it does take time, though. And the argument that it's more expensive, I disagree. Because when you're eating more fat in your diet, you have more satiety. And so you don't need to eat as much. So I think it's a big argument about, oh, you know, eating paleo is really expensive. Well, yeah, I do spend a lot of money on food, but I'm eating less food. And, you know, when you're eating primarily vegetables and fruits, I mean, come on, how expensive is that? You know, I mean, really, I mean, let's if we're really going to be honest about it. So, you know.
I love that. The noun form of being satiated.
Satiety.
Alexicon, did you catch that?
I did. I was like, satiate. When you started describing the pumpkin cacao deliciousness that you'll be creating, my appetite was certainly not satiated. So
she said she's going to make one for me too. We haven't yet mentioned this, but I think I'm going on the, what did you call it?
You're going to take the 30-day paleo challenge.
Really? Is that like the ice bucket challenge except with steaks?
Except it's 30 days. It's with only steaks. Yes.
Only Professor Gordon would bring that.
I would dump a bucket full of steaks on myself in a second. If we were...
It's too bad it's radio, Mark.
It's too bad. It is.
I'm sure in somebody's mind eye, they can picture that.
I think people would pay to see that. And if this professorial thing doesn't work out, you know, I have all sorts of ideas.
I only agree if those steaks are grass-fed, antibiotic hormone-free, organic, free-range, maybe Kobe.
Yeah. And you know where you can get that? I will say grassroots. Noah, I'd like to ask you. I know your family has owned Grassroots Natural Market since 86?
86.
So 1986, the good old 1980s. You offer some incredible food in your prepared kitchen, and I know there are many options. So tell us about those options, because I'm there at least once a week with your amazing staff preparing some amazing foods. Some are gluten-free, some are vegan, some are grass-fed chicken and beef. So let's talk about some other things that can get our listeners salivating.
Of course. I know I'm hungry just thinking about it over here. So we have a lovely little cafe / restaurant in our health food store. It's cafeteria style. Every day we have a different hot entree of the day and soup. We always have a vegetarian option and a meat option. The vegetarian option is usually vegan. We have a ton of vegan options, a ton of vegetarian options, a lot of meat options, just really nice, healthy, homemade food. And I have a grab-and-go cooler, which is lovely. So when you come by a little bit later, you can always grab something in there if you're in a hurry. We have a juice bar, which is also really great. I don't know how well the juicing fits into paleo, but I think it could make sense, you know? So yeah, our food's really great. I've had the same cooks for almost 30 years.
Wow.
They're fantastic. They're a husband and wife, and we're so lucky to have them. My staff is phenomenal. And yeah, we just take pride in our food and what we prepare and provide.
And the taste is evident. It is literally, as they say, I'm sorry to be so antiquated, the proof is in the pudding. And their rose water chia pudding is fantastic. Can you eat that on paleo? Because if you can, I think I'm going to that diet.
Well, it's coconut based and I use cane sugar.
Does this work? Does this work,
the
everyone?
Cane sugar doesn't work.
Maybe, you know, I could put coconut sugar in there, no problem. We'll take care of it.
There's going to be a paleo version of that in the grab-and-go section before you know it.
Yes, yes.
What kind of resources are either of you aware of for people who want to learn more about this? First of all, we should probably know where the store is in case people want to come down.
Sure.
Where's it located?
We're at 1119 Fair Oaks Avenue in South Pasadena, California, in the Vaughn Shopping Center. We're tucked away in the cozy little corner, but you can see our green umbrellas, so that's always a nice eye catcher. And then, you know, as far as getting more information on paleo diets, the internet, I think, is phenomenal. You know, there's a lot of blogs out there, a lot of people who are active in the community who have a wealth of knowledge to, you know, disseminate and is there for us to have. And you can always come into Grassroots and we can talk to you. And, you know, there's the we're so lucky in our area in the San Gabriel Valley. We're inundated with alternative health practitioners, holistic practitioners, naturopathic doctors, chiropractors. So just look up any of those lovely individuals and I'm sure they can, you know, direct you as well.
You know what? You're a cool guy, Noah. I don't know how many people talk to you and say what I'm about to say, but we're going to go and get some beers at some point made out of mead, or I think you said you could on paleo you can drink mead beer, or maybe beers made out of steak. I don't know what, but we have to do something.
As long as it's gluten-free and GMO-free, we're good.
We're going to do that.
Yes, Noah. We are.
And Sarah, I'd like to ask you, are there any other resources while they're pondering their lifestyle change over beer? What could we read?
I would recommend that the people that I've studied that I think are probably the experts in this field, one is a neural surgeon. So he's done a lot of work in the neural field, and that's Jack Kruse, K-R-U-S-E. He began what's called the leptin reset. So my background is long-term bulimic, very serious 30-year battle with bulimia. What I learned through my own healing from bulimia is that, you know, I was struggling because I was so addicted to sugar and was consuming so much sugar that I had basically been messing with my insulin. You know, type 2 diabetes is a direct result of diet. It completely can be turned around through changing your diet. So the leptin reset kind of helps you to get your cortisol levels back into order. So he's a really good academic, but he's very, very dense. So be prepared for a really, really kind of esoteric read. Rob Wolf is brilliant. There's a wealth of information from Rob Wolf. Mark Sisson, who's more of a primal eater, but he's got great stuff to say about the primal diet as well as primal exercise. There's so many people. Gary Taub. Yeah, so lots of people, but those are my go-tos.
And once maybe our students and our listeners finish all these books on their shelf, maybe they can consider and ponder even a PhD in food studies. Yes, you guys, there is a PhD in anthropology of food, and I think there must be an ethnography in all of this, the paleo lifestyle, and I think we have participant observation. And thanks, Sarah and Noah, for sharing all of this stuff with us, because personal opinion really does make a difference on diet.
Hold on. Don't end so quick. So there's a PhD. I have a couple degrees. I wouldn't say that I have a PhD in food, though, but I'm thinking about it now that you said that.
Oh, yeah. There are PhDs in food studies.
Do you get to sample food as part of the dissertation process?
I think it's mandatory, in fact.
Oh, I'm there.
It's participant observation, after all. How can you study food and not sample?
Isn't it an expensive degree?
Every degree is expensive unless you're employed in a well-paying academic position postgraduate.
Where is that degree? I'm actually
This
curious.
Is the Indiana University at Bloomington. But there are some food blogs as well that you can be reading about. So anthropology has got plenty of offerings for you guys. If you're hungry and your appetite is wet by this, Google. Hello, Lancer staff and faculty. Thanks for your suggestions. The PCC Pulse got a new facelift, so be sure to check out the Pulse every Monday morning for new campus headlines and community updates. Simply log on to pulse.pasadena.edu. That's pulse.pasadena.edu.
Like all great things, our time together must come to an end. Anthropology is a field of study that's as broad or as narrow in scope as the human mind that ponders its wonders. Anthropology teaches us that although every group of people is unique, we're all fundamentally the same.
Tune in next week for more Super O Show with Professors Mark Joshua Gordon and Alexicon Altunian, where we find culture everywhere and in everything, right here on the Lancer Radio Network, Pasadena Campus Sounds, on www.lancerradio.org.